All right, you guys, happy Monday and get ready because we are going on a journey. I left you guys on the ultimate cliffhanger last week. I did not intend to, by the way. I genuinely wanted to get the information out as soon as possible that Tyler Robinson is not suicidal. And I'm going to tell you how I know that. Also, while investigating this assassination, there is a politician's name that keeps coming up. And now he's apparently mad that we keep asking questions. I'm beginning to think that he might know something that he hasn't yet shared. So I wanted to kind of loop you guys into this and see what you think. Welcome back to Candace. Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself. Tyler Robinson didn't kill himself. I mean, these are the phrases that we now use and that we say when we expect that the federal government is telling us a lie. Last week, I have to tell you, I was contacted by a source who I vetted with information that answered a lot of the lingering questions that we've had about the investigation. Not all of them, but some of them, some of the big ones. First and foremost, we were like, how exactly did it work? How did Tyler Robinson turn himself in, as we were told, but also never confessed? And did he actually author those absurd Fed messages? Because I'm thinking no. Lastly, what was he doing at Dairy Queen? Doesn't really quite fit into our timeline. Also, don't expect this kid who just tried out being a stone cold killer to really have an appetite. And why exactly did the feds withhold that information at Dairy Queen? And why are they allegedly stalking the Dairy Queen to see who comes in and out? Well, we have the story that could possibly potentially answer all of those questions. And it certainly makes a lot more sense than the slop that the government is currently trying to feed us. First and foremost, Tyler Robinson has never confessed. They acknowledge that he has never confessed to this crime, and he still is pleading innocence on the shooting. In fact, I was told that he was quote unquote bewildered by the idea that he carved casings. I should be clear, he does not dispute the fact that it is his gun at all. It is his gun. But Tyler is not exactly a gun enthusiast. He doesn't hunt like his other brothers do. In fact, he's apparently a fisherman. The reason that he has that gun in the first place is because it is, in fact, a custom-made family heirloom. Tyler is the firstborn son, so he inherited. That's what firstborns do. They get the family heirloom. That is why he has the gun. As many of you guys have noted, the Robinson family appear to be conservative, hence the hunting and the fishing as the sports of their choosing. I am told that they are fans of Charlie Kirk, and they are fans of Donald Trump, although this source noted that Tyler, like many other conservatives, have expressed, wished that Trump would sometimes tone down his speech and his rhetoric. Now, on the topic of rhetoric, I am told that Tyler absolutely did not author those text messages. What text messages? He has no idea where these messages came from. Believes that they are therefore entirely fictionalized. It turns out, you're going to be shocked, that he doesn't actually use words like vehicle, which should come as no surprise to anyone that has a brain. By the way, I'm sure you caught this, but there's old footage of Tyler Robinson that is now circulating from a car accident that he had. And during the discussion with the officer that showed up, Tyler certainly refers to it as his car, not his vehicle, because that's how most Americans, how most English speakers refer to a car, unless they're in the military or on the police force. So here is 2022 police body cam footage, in case you missed that, of Tyler making a crash report. Take a listen.
Your mom's on her way?
Yeah, she's gonna be a minute. She's gotta shuttle over from where she's at to her car and then drive over.
Gotcha.
His mother was gonna shuttle over from her car? Interesting. There's more, of course. Of most interest to me, what I've learned is that his father does not believe, his parents don't believe that their son committed this crime. I was like, huh? Excuse me? That's a far cry from what the media has been telling us. Remember, the media presented this amazing story. The father realized his son was guilty, so it goes, right? And then he phoned over a friend to help him convince his son to turn himself in, because this guy, you know, this mysterious guy was a friend and just had a connection with Tyler. And eventually they said, you've got to do the right thing here. We know this is you. That was the vibe. Certainly, that's what the media was putting down for us to pick up. Well, I was told actually that it was kind of the opposite. That quote unquote family friend who we learned was a former detective with the police force, at least, and so therefore has strong ties with the police station, informed the family. It was that in-between person that informed the family that Tyler had been identified as the shooter. He recognized him. He knows Tyler. He gives them the heads up. And then I'm told, and I believe this, that the way in which he got arrested, or rather turned himself in, was because that family friend slash neighbor slash former detective told him, hey, it's best for you to turn yourself in, because there's only one of two options here. Either you turn yourself in and everything is peaceable, or, you know, the SWAT team could come in here and arrest you and things would get crazy. So that's what happened. He went over to their house. Tyler was called over. Tyler was bewildered. He disputed the idea that he had murdered Charlie Kirk. In fact, according to my source, Tyler has never even stepped foot on UVU campus. Tyler, it turns out, has, which has already been revealed, was accepted into Utah State University, not Utah Valley. And that's actually interesting if you pause and reflect on that, because we didn't really consider how on earth Tyler became not just familiar with the layout of the campus, but familiar with the rooftop layout of UVU campus. So familiar that he knew exactly how to scale across the rooftops to duck down in order to take an almost impossible shot at a Charlie Kirk who was sitting beneath a tent. How did he know how to do all of that? Had he been there before? Did he knew where Charlie was going to be sitting in it, that he would have that shot from on top of the Losey Center? What? Right? I would actually, and I don't know, but I would imagine that even actual current UVU students don't know that possibility. Like, they're not even that familiar with how to scale the rooftops and what shots they can take from it. We'll see. Curiously, however, my source says that Tyler Robinson was nearby the campus on that day. I'm wondering if that fact, which I'm trying to learn more information regarding, explains the Dairy Queen photo. Because what was he doing around the campus on that day? Where exactly was he around the campus on that day? This photo never made any sense. I plugged it into my timeline. It wasn't fitting in. So if you're wondering why exactly Tyler would agree to go to the police station if he's not guilty, ironically, the police were honest that day. On one of the points, well, first and foremost, that point is Tyler is not suicidal. He wanted to go to the police station so that he didn't risk accidentally getting shot by the police swarming his home, as I said earlier, in a theatrical arrest setting. But rather confusingly, Nate Brooksby, tells us that Tyler is suicidal. Whatever. Let's just take a listen to what Nate Brooksby said after he had been apprehended. Take a listen.
So I get a call from my friend, and his said, "Hey, how you doing? Good." And it's not, you know, he's been retired a few years. We'll call each other. It's not unusual for me to get a call from him or vice versa. And at 8:02 p.m., he calls me. Hey, I can tell his voice is kind of shaky. So my first thought is, who died? Like, who's he going to tell me that died? And then. I couldn't fathom what actually came out of his mouth. So he said, "Hey, I know who Charlie Kirk shooter is. I know the family through religious association, and he's in Washington County now, and we're working on trying to get him to come in voluntarily, during that phone call, some information was provided about Tyler potentially having some suicidal ideations, was en route to a remote area of Washington County. The parents convinced him not to do that and, you know, conveyed that they would, you know, stand by him and help him surrender peacefully.
I'm told that's not true. Tyler was not suicidal at all. He was just confused and didn't want to get shot. And then he gets to that part, right? He then tells us, Brooksby, that he came in willingly because he didn't want to die. Let's take a listen to that portion.
Within the hour, my friend drove Tyler and his parents to my office, where he was greeted by plainclothes detectives. So that was part of the deal. Is Tyler knew it was just inevitable with all the law enforcement pressure that he, his, you know, his picture in the news, the gun on the news. He knew it was inevitable that he would be caught. He was fearful of a SWAT team hit on his house, or he was fearful of being shot by law enforcement. So part of the negotiation and getting him to bring himself in was that we would treat it as delicate and as soft as possible to make him feel comfortable to where he would show up at my office. And that's exactly what happened.
It can't be both. It can't be both. Was he suicidal and wanting to die, or was he worried about dying? It can't be both. And I didn't catch on to that early on. The answer was he came in because he is not suicidal and did not want to get shot and was confused, as I am told. Now, you're probably wondering why the father and the mother didn't speak out to assert his innocence. That would make sense, right? Why don't you come right out and dispute everything immediately? Well, interestingly enough, I'm told that it's because the feds told them that if they spoke out, their lives could be at risk. Like they needed to keep things private, and they convinced the family to go into witness protection. Like, your lives are in danger. You shouldn't say anything. Somebody could, like, you know, just come back and try to harm you guys because of what your son did. You should go into witness protection and don't speak to anybody. Trust us, we're the feds, bro. And they agreed, of course, in the fog of it all. Why wouldn't you agree? But then, like any good, maybe conservative family, you start going, I don't really trust these feds. Like, I'm a little suspicious about the feds. Here's another point of interest, okay? His father had no idea that Tyler was gay. That's what I'm told. They are learning this in and through the media. They thought that Lance was just his roommate. And they were especially shocked because apparently Tyler kept mentioning to them that he wanted them to meet some girl that he was seeing. Now, I would like to interject my own voice here and say that I think this girl was likely Lance, and Tyler was working up the courage to tell his family that he was gay. That is what is most likely, in my opinion, because we know for a fact that Tyler was in fact in a relationship with Lance, because we have exclusive photos, by the way, they're about to show you, that the two of them posted to their Instagrams. This is Lance posting Halloween era photos. I forgot to post. My boyfriend is the best. Love you. Don't worry. That handle has since been taken down of what Tyler's handle was, but he's got a handle that doesn't have his name in it. So he's maybe trying to hide this stuff. And then there's another photo of them. And this one's posted by Lance again, pics from when Tyler had a mustache. You can see that they are in a relationship. Just makes sense that he was working up the courage to maybe tell his family about that. Now, I was told also that Tyler is off the charts intelligent and always has been. We know this. He had a perfect GPA in high school. Now, that is precisely what made the idea of him being so stupid as to author a full confessional via text messages pointedly absurd. Like, any person with a modicum of intelligence is going to go, I'm not going to put this down in writing with every detail. And apparently whoever offered those messages, likely feds, didn't have a modicum of intelligence, or they would have maybe not included every single detail there. The family says that the photo of the young man that is coming up the stairs, which was shared, that blurry image, is definitively not Tyler Robinson. And let me just say, I never thought it looked like him. Neither did you. Okay. Face looks different. Face looks more narrow. Also, that person looks taller. Every time I say, I'm like, this person is taller than Tyler Robinson. Tyler Robinson also appears to have full lips, even though this image is blurry. We're not looking for someone that's got that got fuller lips. And Tyler Robinson looks broader than that individual walking, right? So I'm on board with that person walking up the stairs. It's not Tyler Robinson because I feel like it was intentionally blurred. They also never gave us the footage at all because in order to blur it, they probably needed a static image. Also, the family believes that, and this is really interesting, Tyler Robinson's apartment was staged after his arrest. Now, you will recall that I spoke to Lance's family. And one of the things that Lance's family said was, it was, hey, we own that apartment. They pay rent to us. We've never met Tyler Robinson. But I can tell you that it seems like they were trying to hide the fact that this apartment got raided. And it's very strange that they immediately cleared Lance as a suspect. And I was told by other people in the department that they wanted to keep that raid very hush-hush. They didn't want anybody to know about the raid. There was no mention of this raid. And Lance immediately gets cleared as a suspect. Why? Well, according to Tyler's family, they went to that apartment after his arrest. And they felt the apartment was staged. And that intentionally in Tyler's room, a furry bed was placed. Almost sort of implying that they're trying to transfer the attributes of Lance onto Tyler. And that's shady. But again, when I put together what I'm being told by Lance's family and what I'm hearing from the Robinson family through a third party, I will say that it matches. It kind of seems like they're agreeing. One family's going, hey, Lance is kind of evil. Why is he getting cleared? And the other one's going, Tyler's not this guy. Tyler is not this guy, so what the hell is going on, guys? What is actually going on right now? There's also something else that's weird that I want to mention here, and that is the unusual lengths in which the media and the sheriff's department, they've gone through all of these lengths, I would say, to protect the identity of that former sheriff friend who was the one who convinced Tyler to turn himself in. Even in that press conference, by the way, Brooksby, I don't like the way he's moving. I don't like the way Nate Brooksby is breathing. I got to be honest with you. It's a vibe. For no reason at all, he feels like he has to explain how he got on the phone with this sheriff friend of his. Like, nobody asked you whether or not it was usual for him to call you. He's kind of over-explaining here, in my opinion. Take a listen.
At exactly 8:02 on the 11th, I received a call from a friend of mine who happens to be a retired detective that worked for me for many years. I didn't put that out there initially. I wanted to protect that individual as much as possible. Unfortunately, in the court documents, which is standard, he was referenced as a retired Washington County deputy. So I didn't put that out there. It was in the court docs. I was trying to protect even that information and just saying retired law enforcement in general.
Why are you trying to protect him? Why did you feel the need to explain to us earlier? It's not unusual for him to call me, this guy, but I'm fortunate that information is in documents that he was, formerly working for me and working with me. What do you mean? If he was formerly working for you, that would mean he was a public figure. And this should be usual. Public figures, people that work for police departments are always public. And their informations are something, their name is someone we could easily research. It's nonsense. He's weird about this. He says that he retired. I think a journalist asks in the audience, that former friend detective, how long has he been off the force? And he says, I don't know if we have that clip. Maybe we didn't cut that, Skylar. But he's like, 3 years. But actually, we were able to figure out who that individual was. And it's, I feel, someone that we need to get in touch with. We've tried to get in touch with him. The name of that individual is former Deputy Mike Mitchell. Okay. Deputy Mike Mitchell. Now, oddly, despite a career of 25 years in the police force, I can't find a single trace of him in old newspapers. So I'm looking for more information on this guy. I understand that he knows Tyler through the Boy Scouts. He's involved in the LDS Church. And I think Tyler was the Boy Scout leader. That's the connection there. We were able to confirm that this Mike Mitchell lives on the block, lives nearby, as was told via other sources. And thus far, we have only been able to even see a picture of him. There's just one picture or a set of pictures that we were able to find. And that, again, which would mean Brooksby lied a little bit. I don't like a little bit of lies, because you usually have to lie a little bit when there's something bigger that you're afraid of. according to this post, he retired last January. Here it is. On the left, you have Brooksby. I don't trust that guy. Just don't trust him. And on the right-hand side, you have, today we celebrated the career of Detective Mike Mitchell. After over 24 years of serving, 24 years, Washington County, he is retiring, starting in the jail back in 1999. Sheriff Brooksby and Detective Mitchell both had some wonderful stories to share. We would like to give our heartfelt thanks to Detective Mitchell and all who came out to give him a warm send-off. Congratulations, Detective Mitchell. This is the only trace of this guy I could find. That's weird. That is very odd. That is unusual. That is an anomaly. When you serve that long in the police force, you inevitably make it into the news. So I am asking, and we tried to reach out to this individual. We have had no luck. If you have any more information about this individual, if he is your Boy Scout leader or he works for your church, please send us tips at candaceowens.com. Guys, I'm going to again say here, we appreciate all of the tips, but please don't send us links to, like, you know, somebody else's video and their theories, because we're a very small team. There's literally four of us, and we want to get to actual tips pertaining to the questions that we're asking and that we're looking for about the individuals that we're mentioning, not other people's theories. If they have, like, a theory about what direction the bullet might have traveled, please reserve that to our social media handles. Tag us on Facebook, tag us on Instagram, and we'll get a look at those videos. But we really want to keep the tips lined for answers to the questions that we're coming across. And again, we appreciate you guys so much, because we wouldn't have gotten as far as we have if it wasn't for that tips box. I do also want to say, before we get into reading and telling you something even crazier that happened, I'm talking crazy, crazy. I do want to assert here that I'm uncomfortable with the fact that despite all the friends that Charlie Kirk made, all the schmoozing that he did, presidents, right, department heads, I am the only person that is publicly demanding further investigation into his assassination. Why? It's totally rubbing me the wrong way. Something's not right here. Even Turning Point USA, they're just like, we've accepted. Like, obviously, there are holes in this narrative, and they're just like, we're going to just keep up his show. What is going on, actually? I just want to say that and get that off of my chest. I don't like it. It's rubbing me the wrong way. All right, guys, throwing it to some of our sponsors. I tell you all the time about Preborn because I've watched way too many people that are close to me be vilified for standing up for truth. That's what I do here, just standing up for truth. And I have felt that sting of media pressure and lies that are told. But I've also felt something else, which is courage. And I think that we have to stop playing defense. We should not water down what we believe is palatable, because silence is not kindness. It's actually consent. And right now, the greatest silence is around the lives that are being ended before they even take their first breath. If we're going to call ourselves defenders of life, we need to act like it. And that's why I'm asking everyone to join me to fight back with action, with truth, and with love. For just $28, that is the cost of giving a woman that is in a crisis a free ultrasound. She might be considering abortion, but for just $28, you can help her see the life that's growing inside of her, and you will be able to provide her with truth that I don't think the culture will ever provide her with. So don't sit this one out. Don't wait for permission. Be bold, be clear, be unapologetically pro-life. Go to preborn.com/Candace right now. You can give $28. You can also give 10 times that amount if you want to, or if you can. This is the line that I think that we have to stand on. Stand up for truth, stand up for what's right, and you can save so many lives from abortion and stand firm in the gospel as well. Again, preborn.org/Candace to provide an ultrasound for just $28. Also reminding you guys about Tax Network USA, because you might be someone that owes back taxes, or you might be someone who has tax returns that are not filed. If you forgot to file for an extension, the October 15th deadline is fast approaching and time is running out. If you haven't gathered all of your documents or made any estimated payments, you could soon be targeted by the IRS. They can start to garnish your wages, freeze your bank accounts, or even seize your property, but there is help that's available. Tax Network USA is a nationwide tax firm that has helped taxpayers save over $1 billion in tax debt. They have filed hundreds of thousands of tax returns and assisted thousands in reducing their tax burdens, and they can help you as well. So don't wait. Visit tnusa.com/Candace, or you can call 1-800-958-1000 for a 100% free consultation. In one short call, the experts at Tax Network USA will guide you through some simple questions to determine how much you can save. You can take action now before it's too late. Again, visit tnusa.com/Candace or call 1-800-958-1000. Okay, so something very strange happened this weekend, and I need to tell you. I need to tell you guys about it. I need to offload this and get your opinion. Now, first and foremost, I have to tell you about this student who I'm going to refer to as Nick. Nick is not his real name. I'm going to refer him as Nick to protect his identity, obviously. I came across Nick very early on in this investigation. In fact, you might recall when I shared a photo online of a person that looked suspicious. He was wearing like a black suit and black glasses, and he seemed to have a strap hanging out of his bag. Here he is right here, and he was in the food court. I shared that photo because Nick had sent it to me into our tips box and said, this person looks rather mysterious. He's running through the food court. And from there, he kind of became my boots on the ground. He was like, hey, I go to UVU. I'm a major Candace Owens fan. I want to help in any way that I can. Okay. So that's how that happened. That was really, and right away he told me on like day two of the investigation that he worked on Phil Lyman's gubernatorial campaign. Phil Lyman ran against the current governor Cox, and he lost. And one day, very early on, this must have been like day three, Nick cold calls me and Phil Lyman's on the phone. Okay. Like I said, he ran for governor, and I was prepping for the show and things were early on and I was still in a very aggrieved phase, and I didn't really know I was on the phone with this guy, Phil Lyman. And I was like, hey, thank you so much. I appreciate that you're offering help. And Nick insisted to me, he's a fantastic person. He has tons of resources. He knows the area. If you need any help, he can help you. Okay, great. Fast forward to me looking into the witness list, and obviously we spoke about this Tiffany Peterson Barker, that very weird clip of her with her nieces at like 4 a.m. in the morning, just speaking on Good Morning America, and her energy was just weird to me. I thought her being there was weird. Obviously, this is my podcast. I can say whatever I want. We reached out to her, and then she gave us a ton of information, but never actually presented to us. She never sent me directly any footage that could verify that she was there when Charlie Kirk got shot. Okay. And she was a bit upset that I didn't clarify that. I thought it was weird that she wouldn't just text me the footage because it didn't allow me to confirm that she was where she said she was. That's what metadata is for. Metadata instantly will say, here's where you were at what time. And this is this person's iPhone. So I wasn't going to lie to my audience. I just told you guys, hey, you can check her out on her Instagram. Here's her excuse. She says that this is why her nieces said that, and we sort of moved on, right? But then I learned from Nick that the photo of the person who was wearing that black suit and dark sunglasses had come from Tiffany Barker's mother. I was like, well, that's weird, whatever. And then you'll recall we learned from Tiffany when I was trying to figure out, how did you get this hit on Good Morning America? Like, did you share something that would have had them reach out? Well, then I told you, she told us, actually, Phil Lyman is the person that put me on Good Morning America. My sister ran with him as lieutenant governor. And I was like, oh, okay. So Phil Lyman got you that position on Good Morning America. You had a connection there that made that happen. Don't know how I missed this. But then I learned that Phil Lyman himself was very involved in all of the communications that immediately went out about the shooting, and that his car was in the driveway of the now infamous TMZ footage, which showed the shooter walking twice that day by this house. In fact, Phil Lyman says that he had just pulled into that driveway minutes earlier and had just missed the shooter. Here he is in his own words speaking to Kaylee McEnany. Take a listen.
I do want to linger on a moment for what you just told us, and I'm going to ask the team to pull back up that surveillance footage that we've gotten from TMZ, from those neighborhood cameras. You said that in that footage is your driveway, and you parked there at 11:30 a.m. We know this footage that you're looking at was taken at 11:49 a.m. So you would have been on that street, that driveway, 19
yes,
minutes.
Right across. Yeah. It's not my driveway. It's my aunt's driveway. Parking lot was very full. He's walking in front of my aunt's house there right now. And my cousin's house is the driveway that is taking that photo. And my CRV, the gray CRV in the distance there, is my car. I parked there probably 10 minutes before he walked by. And I had not seen this footage till just now. And it just keeps so many things that keep linking up. It's really astonishing to me. And then we went back to this house afterwards. They thought they had the the shooter. So I took a friend of mine. We went back to my aunt's house and said, well, we'll just hang out here for a while. And before long, the people were combing the backyard, as you saw. She had the footage of that. And pretty soon helicopters are overhead. And so this is very, very local to me. Very, I mean, not only is it Utah, but it's kind of my neighborhood where I spent so much of my childhood and all of my relatives. Yeah. This is really astonishing. I got up yesterday morning at 6 o'clock to drive up and meet Charlie. And I haven't been to bed since then, because it's just one thing after another. And so astonishing that this could happen in Utah.
Now, just to be clear and to reiterate, 19 minutes before the shooter walks across, he had just pulled into the driveway. Phil Lyman pulled into the driveway. He says that he saw Charlie Kirk that day. We're going to get to that. Also, when he says, like, he grew up there and his family, I mean, his family owns, we were able to determine 12 homes right there. Incredible. Okay. Absolutely incredible. And that, his little press tour, obviously now you're like, you know, explaining your car was in the driveway. So the issue's close to him. That kind of makes sense. Then he went on to Alex Jones and spoke about where he was when the shot rang out. And what's kind of, and I'm laughing because it's kind of absurd, he kind of sort of blames it on these two random goth girls, maybe. Like, he's kind of implying like there were these girls that were wearing black and maybe they should be taken a look at further. Take a listen.
Just yesterday, someone comes in and says, we've got video. He came off the roof. He walked up. He came up here to the parking lot, got in the car with an individual, and they drove away. Well, that's not the story that came. That he escaped another route. And there are people who are coordinating this thing. I do not believe that 30-06 that they showed recovered in the bushes was ever on the roof. I think it was in the bushes to start with. And now I'm not saying that Tyler Robinson wasn't on the roof. I'm not saying he didn't pull a trigger. I was in very, very close proximity. So another interesting thing, like I say, I left the front of the stage. I wanted to meet some of my friends and bring him down front. So I was clear at the east end, and I heard this loud boom. I heard this loud bang. And I turned around, and I'm looking like, what was that? And pretty soon some people started, you know, running. Everyone was trying to process. And I thought, this is a gunshot, and there's going to be more of them. I thought it could turn into a mass shooting. So I go to the people closest to me. Everyone's ducking down behind the concrete retaining walls, and some of them were still kind of oblivious, but there were two people that were standing there, two girls, very goth, very black, you know, and I just walked, I stepped up to the side of them, and I said, did that not happen right here? Did you hear that? Was that right here? And they said, yeah, it was just right over there. So they're confirming, yeah, the shooter or wherever that sound came from is right here. The thing that didn't really dawn on me is that they were not running. They were not frightened. In fact, as I stepped up, I heard one of the girls and they were talking to each other, and they're looking at these kids, looking at the scene down below them of all these people fleeing for their lives. And she says, go F yourselves. Like I say, I was not processing that. I was trying to figure out what was going on. I thought this is a separate conversation. I don't know what it is. In hindsight, as I've watched that over and over, it's like these people were not afraid.
Okay, so what I get from that is he was up high because he says they're looking down below, and that maybe people that are wearing black are immediately suspects. I don't know, because they were not afraid. Anyways, he also went on to a local Utah news station and spoke about how he was with Charlie just before Charlie went onto stage. Take a listen.
Phil, thanks for joining us, first of all. But I saw a picture.
Yeah, thank you.
I saw a picture of you with Charlie Kirk, and it looks like you were like maybe right before he went on stage. Is this just like minutes before this happened?
Yeah, no, I was basically backstage, and when he came out and was throwing the hats, I was there. I was standing next to stage, and I would have been there when the shooting took place, but I needed to go meet some of my friends, and I didn't want to just hang around. There's a part of me that's glad that I wasn't in close proximity, and part of me that feels bad that I wasn't there just in some form of moral, you know, presence and support. It's such a tragic thing.
When I combine those clips, I'm kind of unclear as to where he was exactly when the shots rang out, if he was close or if he felt bad that he wasn't close. Anyways, he went onto Instagram that night as Tiffany was prepping her Good Morning America hit, I suppose. And he speaks further about what he was doing back onto campus and what exactly he remembers. Take a listen. Again, this is on September 10th, and it's around 11:30 p.m. at night.
Hey, it's September 10th, 2025, and I was just heading back from Salt Lake to Blanding. I'm getting a very late start. It's about 11:30 at night, and I wanted to swing back by UVU campus where Charlie Kirk was killed today and see if I could let a few of the police officers know how much I appreciate the work they're doing, see if there's some college students here that I could rub shoulders with, more for my benefit than for theirs. But what I really wanted to share was I was very close this morning where Charlie Kirk was at, met him backstage, and we talked for a moment before he went on stage, and I was backstage as he started speaking, and then decided to go up top, and I went up to the top, and ironically was very close to where the shooter was. Apparently the shot was very loud, and I determined pretty quickly that whoever it was on the roof, and it was a 200-yard kill shot.
Where was he? I don't know. I find this to be a little weird, but look, let's be clear, by no means conclusive of anything other than perhaps a strange coincidence, and maybe this is why he feels so impassioned and wants to keep speaking about it. Also, you know, he's a gubernatorial candidate. Makes sense. This would be a political moment to show that you're a leader. And look, life is not exactly an Agatha Christie novel, right, where the guilty party somehow inserts himself into the investigation. So I park that aside, I keep pushing, and I'm following more public leads. But also, I do recall in the back of my mind that both Phil and Tiffany Barker, and as it would turn out, another person that lives on that street with the last name Shumway, kept trying to get me to look into Governor Cox because he's, according to Tiffany, very supportive of the trans stuff. You should look into Tiffany, into Governor Cox. And similarly, the Shumway emails were like, you should look into this Governor Cox because he likes trans. So they're open and close. That feels to me always just like Fed bait, left versus right, right? He likes trans people, so it has to be him. Okay. Oddly, look, I'm just following the facts here. Nothing in my investigation has made me ask a question further about Governor Cox on that day. Nothing came up organically, so I'm not going to push it just because he's a Democrat. And actually, where I was at this process, what's that? Pushing that because Governor Cox is his, I said Democrat, because he's his, you know, he's warring with him. And that's the candidate that he wants to go after. And I actually start noticing as I'm looking into this investigation that everyone who is involved on that day, I mean, literally the person who spots the shooter on the roof, military, the person who says, oh, happened to be in the right place in the Flag of Halls where I saw him running, also in the military. And I'm starting to think, is it possible that this is like a military hit? I don't know, but I'd like to find out. Next came a tip that you guys saw me receive live on the show. Someone paid, a woman paid to say, Candace, there's more footage of the shooter on that day. And you should know that that shooter was with a woman, right? That's a tip that I received, that the shooter was with a woman and he was seen changing clothes and that they've cut out that footage. So I reach out to that individual and the name that they give me for the house that this took place in, and I'm able to confirm that this property is nearby, is owned by Lyman Branch. So now I want to be clear, I could not attach whether or not yet this individual is related to Phil Lyman, but he's been honest about the fact that his family lives around there a lot. Like, you know, the Steel Lyman clan is here. So I was a little bit on alert, maybe like a lot of bit on alert, and I decided to just do a basic search into Phil Lyman. Like, is his family in the military? I don't know. I'm asking the question to myself, and I'm quite surprised that it's impossible for me to find out who his mother and father are. Like, I literally don't know what goes on in Utah, but it seems like a very weird thing to me that you would be able to keep information about who your mom and dad are private if you're running for governor. Right. So I just simply ask Nick. I haven't shared any of this with Nick because I know that he worked for Phil Lyman, and I'm not accusing Phil Lyman of anything. I'm just like trying to actually shut that down. And he says, I don't know who his mom and dad are. I'm like, what do you mean? Don't know? Okay. Weird. Whatever. I then decide to keep pushing on military leads that I have, people that were on the ground that day who I've confirmed were in the military. Anyways, then something insane happens. Nick calls me. And he's a little bit undone. He tells me that Phil Lyman has just showed up at his house. Now, I want to be very clear. Nick is 20 years old. He's a 20-year-old UVU student and a major super fan of Phil as of 48 hours ago. And he's very uncomfortable. And he tells me that Phil randomly messaged him saying that he was nearby in town, and asked Nick for his address, something that he never had. And Nick, quite naively, being this Phil super fan, thinks that Phil's going to come and offer him a job because he's been so on it investigating this Charlie Kirk assassination. And that's not what happens at all. Instead, he says that he shows up, he opens the door for him, and his energy is very weird. And he's asking him weird questions. He's looking out of the window nervously. He sits down at the table. He's asking him questions about my investigation. I'm like, I shared nothing with Nick. I literally was asking him, can you go here, pick up this, whatever it is. And he is thinking this is getting weird. I said, what specifically did he say to you? Well, he tells me that Phil has also set up a time to meet with Ian Carroll. Okay, so Ian Carroll is conducting his own separate investigation. We are not collaborating at all. But Ian Carroll publicized that he was going up to Utah because he wanted to be on the ground physically by himself. And he was reaching out to people who had been speaking about having been there. And Phil Lyman is so gracious that he offers to give him a tour. And Nick tells me, he's like, that's really weird now because we're like 2 weeks on from the shooting and Phil Lyman lives 4 hours away. So that's very, very gracious of him to do, but his energy isn't good. And then he mentions Governor Cox and he mentions Tyler Boyer of Turning Point USA and says that, again, this is according to Nick, that Tyler Boyer and the Lyman have been speaking and that they're, you know, really going to make Governor Cox, and I'm paraphrasing here, but apparently there's another Utah event, USU event coming up, and Governor Cox is supposed to speak. And Phil Lyman intimates that, like, you know, this at this TPUS event, Governor Cox isn't going to look great. I'm like, what? He then tells him, I'm going to go, if you don't mind, I'm going to take a phone call in my car. So he's just idling in a 20-year-old's driveway who just happened to work on his campaign. And he's on the phone, and this is why he's calling me panicking. He's like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know why he's being so weird. I don't know why he's asking me questions about this investigation. And I'm like, yeah, this is weird. This is very weird. So then I'm like, I'm honing in here. I'm like, what's going on? I feel like he knows something at the very least. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's how I feel. And I begin actually searching through our tips box for anything related to Phil Lyman. Maybe somebody else noticed something or knew something or he said something. And lo and behold, very early on, someone just messaged us and said, hey, like, you should probably ask more questions about Phil Lyman, because every time I look into this investigation locally, him and his family members are popping up. And then that person tells me that his nephew had sort of done this public tour, like Phil Lyman's nephew did this public tour saying that he was going to walk the same route that the shooter walked near his grandmother's house, and that they found, you guys remember this, they found the Converse footprint nearby his grandma's house. And he presented a map, like, this is it. This is actually from his Instagram. He presents this map, and his nephew's name is Shane. And this, again, this was all public. I'm only looking at things publicly. And let's just look at some of these posts from nephew Shane. I mean, first and foremost, he's with his friends. He said, I took my friends to my grandma's house tonight, and we retraced his steps. And we took pictures in the exact place that the security cameras caught him. I've been through this new experience for the last few days. I'm still very glad to have attended and to support Charlie Kirk and to see him. The last pic shows Converse brand footprints. And then he does hashtags. And here are him and the three friends. And by the way, I'm looking at the friend on the right and I'm like, I don't know. I'd like to know who that is at the very least. And I'd like to know who everybody in this photo is. This is just interesting. Like, you guys are in the staircase and posting side by sides. Like, they put these side by side photos of them in the staircase. And I just was like, I need to just know more about you. And I need to know more about these two individuals who I couldn't find on his friends list. And they certainly hadn't liked the photo, or else I would have messaged them directly to figure out who they are. And yeah, I found that very strange. And so I messaged Nick and I asked him whether or not he had ever received any images or videos from Phil directly. At the very least, we can see his line of vision so I can figure out where exactly he was when the shots ran out. And I'm wondering if like we can maybe get some footage that we didn't have before when the shots ran out. And also, by the way, metadata is king. That's kind of been very, it's good to see because then I can put it in my timeline. That's why I love metadata. I can say this exactly happened at this time. Strangely, Phil kind of freaks out. He doesn't want to share those photos with Nick. And he asks him explicitly, whose side are you on? Whose side are you on? I thought we were all on the same side. We're all trying to catch Charlie Kirk's killer one way or the other. You inserted yourself into this, got on the phone with me. I was not even trying to make any communication with you. I literally am just asking questions. And now all of a sudden it's like, oh, you don't want to answer any questions. You don't want to share anything. And he tells me that yesterday, Phil Lyman just calls him and he shouts at him. Like, who the F do you think you are kind of a deal? You know what I mean? Like, who are you to ask me for anything? I already gave my photos to Taylor Hansen. And so at that point, I was like, look, you've been great, Nick, but I don't want you being shouted out. I don't want you feeling comfortable in your own home. I would like you to just remove yourself entirely from the boots on the ground elements of this investigation. I don't think Phil is acting in a way that I perceive to be stable, given the fact that, again, he inserted himself in this investigation. And we're asking, this is my car on the street. Okay, you want to be helpful. We're asking you to be helpful. And now all of a sudden you're showing up at a 20-year-old's house and you're being weird. I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And I said I could reach out to Phil directly by myself. And I did. I reached out to both Phil and I reached out to his nephew, Shane. And I asked for them to identify the guys in that photo. Like I said, I was interested in who those individuals were because I couldn't find it on his friend list. And in response, Shane immediately takes his profile private. And Phil Lyman, leaves me on read. So I am now left in the predicament where I need to just ask the public, if you are one of those two kids that are in the photos there, I would love to ask you some questions since you publicized this tour. I mean, they even did the full video walking through where he walked. And, you know, he said, my uncle, he posted Phil Lyman. So my uncle was with Charlie. This is the video that they posted. Everything was done publicly. And now I'm like, okay, you could maybe you have something that's helpful. I want to ask you about, could you send me that photo? Could you send me that video? Could you send me all of this stuff? And now I'm getting radio silence. So unfortunately, because I need to figure out what happened on that day, I'm turning to the public to try to identify those people and anything else that you may know that may help put things together for us. Again, please reserve the tips at CandiceOwens.com for actual tips related to the questions that we are asking, not for just comments. Those sorts of things, videos that you'd like me to watch or things that you'd like to do to point me into a different direction, please just tag us on social media so that we can try to manage this process better. Anyways, you guys, giving you a lot of weird stuff going on. Just need to know what on earth happened on that day. I'm going to get to some of your comments here. First, want to tell you about American Financing because the Fed has finally dropped interest rates, and that's great news for American homeowners. Expenses have been a major burden on families. Wages are flat. Prices keep climbing, and for many, the only way to make ends meet is to lean on credit cards. But that cycle of high interest debt makes it hard to stay ahead. If you're a homeowner, you should call my friends at American Financing right now because interest rates have dropped. Many homeowners are seeing options in the low fives, and you can compare that to credit cards that are charging rates that are right now in the 20s or higher's. There is actually an easier path. You can see how much you can finally put your hard-earned equity to work. It can actually work for you. American Financing can help you pay off that expensive debt, free up your cash flow, and keep your budget under control. Their salary-based mortgage consultants are saving customers an average of $800 a month. And if you get started today, you may even be able to delay your next mortgage payment. Take control. Call American Financing today. The number is 800-795-1210. Again, that's 800-795-1210 or visit AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. That's AmericanFinancing.net/Owens. All right, you guys. So what do you think? Is it weird for a gubernatorial candidate to arrive at a 20-year-old's house? Yes, I can answer that for you. That is weird. That is very weird. That was weird. Okay, there's no way around that. And again, hopefully he will answer and he will just send me some videos and that will be, case closed and maybe he doesn't want to help anymore, that's fine. But you can't insert yourself and then pretend you're under attack when people then go, hey, can you answer some basic questions? Marzi is writing to us. She writes, looking into the bullet made me think of the poisoned bullet when hitmen intentionally use a bullet to cause a lot of damage from tumbling and fragmentation. This is done by keyholing the round to tumble or bounce into the body for internal damage, causing many wounds. I actually did not know that at all. I'm super ignorant on the topic of ballistics and things that are actually done. That is, I never even heard about keyholing, so thank you for sharing that. Caitlin Darrigan writes, Candace, as a journalism student with an insatiable thirst for the truth, you are a true model of real journalism. I hope to one day get the chance to work with you. Keep doing everything that you do. May God continue to protect you and your family. I love you, girl. Yeah, I mean, my insatiable thirst is to figure out what happened that day. My gut instinct is that this was a military operation. Based off everything that I've seen and the lingering questions that I have and some other leads that we are working on, that's how I feel. And even when I was trying to find Ms. Mike Mitchell, I could find the Mitchell family. I don't know if it's his family, but the Mitchell name in that area was coming up for like Air Force. And so I, again, when I get into these places where I can't find any more information, I turn to you guys to help me out. But I find it very strange that you would protect somebody who's been on the force for 24 years. Like what? You've always been a public figure, essentially. And I think Brooksby has some nervous energy there when he's like, oh, he called me. That's just totally usual. It's not weird. It's like nobody said it was weird. So why are you answering for something that nobody said? Little things like that. It's the same thing like when I saw Tiffany's interview. I just found it, like most of you did, to be odd, given the fact that the hitman was still on the run, that you would bring your nieces there. And she gave her explanation. And like I said, you can go to her Instagram. She has asked us repeatedly to send you guys to her Instagram where she explains why they decided to go back that early in the morning. And like I said, Phil Lyman was the one who got her the hit, or Phil Lyman's office, her sister, got her the hit on Good Morning America. Kristen Thurette writes, Candace, I am so sorry for the loss of your dear friend. I agree that it's weird that the people closest to him are just moving on. I feel this whole story is very twisted and you are the only one who is capable of unraveling the truth. Yeah, and sadly, the people that I am in partnership with on Demanding More Answers are not even people who were friends with Charlie Kirk. They're just like, obviously this is wrong and this is weird and I'm on the left maybe. Max Blumenthal dropped a bunch of articles last week and I think he's got more coming out. Why is Max Blumenthal, who wasn't a friend of Charlie Kirk, more interested in what happened to Charlie Kirk than the people closest to him? That strikes me as very odd, just odd. I mean, no element. They could at the very least name the donors, get a little bit of revenge, name the donors who were pressuring him, tell the truth about what was happening there. They won't do anything. They're just like, oh, it's all good. It's all good. No, it's not all good, actually. It's not all good at all. Bitsy writes, the whole world is a stage used to hurdle the cattle in the direction that they want to take us. It's all lies. I rejected all. Lord Jesus Christ is King indeed, Bitsy. Miranda Allen writes, I wish I could do more. My thoughts and prayers are with you as you find truth and also mourn a lost friend. God bless and keep you. Pray. It works. I really do believe praying protection over the people who are trying to discover what happened is significant. I really do believe that everyone needs prayer and protection at this moment. Cassie writes, many people I follow on social media have lost credibility with me because they are not asking any questions at all. I can't imagine calling Charlie a friend and not questioning any of this. Yeah, that's what's great. It's like, at the very least, I would expect them to get up there and be like, what's up with these Fed messages? This is weird. No, they're all just like, let's move on. And his legacy is going to be, we're just going to continue the organization without him. I mean, like, I was thinking, if I'm Charlie and I'm looking down, I'm just like, what? Dang. I thought we were super close. Really? I feel like the vibes are not vibing there. I know Savannah would investigate. Savannah's crazy. Savannah, she would investigate. She'd be crazy. She'd be super crazy. She'd be wearing all pink, going down to Utah. That's what Savannah would do. Kaya writes, it's 1963 all over again. They don't like people asking questions. Furthermore, Ian being mentioned. Yeah, random. And I called Ian. I was like, hey, Ian, just letting you know. Like, I don't know. I don't think he's going to necessarily put you on a tour, try to help you, because he's not being very kind right now to this poor guy, Nick, who was like a super, Phil Lyman super fan. And I think that went sideways. Kaya continues, prayer for you and him. You're getting close to something. Keep going. Christ is King. And then my producer has a note that there are a lot of comments asking about the microphone theory. Here's what I will say about that. When I first saw the footage, thought as well that something came upward. But when I looked at image from the side, the microphone is still on him afterwards. So like when you see it from on, it looks like it kind of disappears, but then it kind of shifts when you look at the, when you look at the perspective slightly to the left, you see that it actually stays on him and it's just in the fold. Again, I don't know enough about weaponry to say that that's possible or not possible, but I would imagine if anything did sling into him with that kind of a force, it would fall off. And I can tell you it doesn't fall off. There's another theory that I'm still looking into that has been presented that I think is definitely interesting. It's definitely interesting. And I'm trying to play my cards close to my chest as I ask certain questions. Probably we'll have more on that maybe tomorrow or the next day. But yeah, I do think it's very weird that he was mic'd after he sat down. Tell you that. That's never happened to me at a Turning Point event. They mic you backstage always. So yeah, I thought that was strange. There's a lot of things that were being done for the first time that day. And I'm planning on revealing all of them, by the way. I'm just waiting for everybody to like join me. Where are Charlie's homies at? Why are you guys all silent? Something's not right. I know it's not right. Okay. We don't know, but we know, you know, we don't know, but we know. And soon we're going to know. And that's all I'm going to say about that. We'll see you guys tomorrow.